Ken Keck. I'm the president of the Citrus Research Board, and we help California citrus growers coordinate research with universities and other institutions against the pests and diseases that they are dealing with.
Well, when you say citrus and diseases, you've said a mouthful, because obviously we're dealing with a serious situation with the citrus psyllid spread in California, the host of the Huanglongbing disease, citrus greening as it's known by a lot of folks. But you guys are right in the epicenter of how all these monies and investments of USDA, the growers, the state, and the industry putting money toward these research projects. And the last time we talked to you a few months ago, a new board by USDA had been put in place, advisory board. You got three of your key folks from California and the Florida guys and Texas and other states represented, but they're now in an advisory capacity to USDA on a lot of funding that we've reported about for the next 5 years. Let's start there. How's that whole process going? You've had some meetings and some recommendations, and what you're feeling?
Well, I think that committee has had a real impact on the U.S. Secretary. Congress mandated that this committee be put together to advise on the spending of a lot of federal dollars. That's $125 million to be spent over the next 5 years against citrus diseases. And the way this committee has already been successful is the Secretary has agreed with their recommendation that the year one funding, that is the first $25 million of this, shall be spent against HLB and the citrus psyllid and no other pest or diseases for this first funding cycle.
You know, when we look at citrus, there's been a lot of things over the years, different kinds of challenges. But when you've got money allocated to all citrus diseases and saying we were going to focus on one, that's saying a lot right there, isn't it?
It really is. It's the silver lining, if you can even use that term in relation to this complex disease, is that it has brought all the states together and by extension brought those states' congressional delegations, the advocacy groups like California Citrus Mutual, Texas Citrus Mutual, Florida Citrus Mutual. They have all come together and said, you know, we've all got a common enemy here that we can agree on and that we can ask for action on.
It's not just one research project either. Just in the HLB realm, we've heard all kinds of things. But I think you just got back from Mexico and looking at some of the wasp research and development down there, the tamarixia, I believe they call it. You might give us a little update comment about what you saw down there and what that means. I think you just got back from that trip this week. Is that right?
Yes. You know, California has a great tradition of integrated pest management, and biocontrol has been an important element to California citrus beginning many years ago. And the Mexicans, of course, are also no stranger to the importance of biocontrol when it comes to particular pests. They've been at it for several years. They're a little ahead of California in raising a particular little wasp that, in essence, parasitizes the nymphal stage of the psyllid. Remember, it's not just that a psyllid emerges from an egg. It goes through at least five little stages before it becomes a mature psyllid and flies away. And in this fourth or fifth stage, this wasp knows exactly how to plant an egg inside of that nymphal psyllid. And that egg, of course, hatches, matures into an adult wasp. And in that process, in essence, leaves an empty nymphal cask, a mummy, so to speak, that it can create out of the psyllid. So the scientists call this an endomepathic predator of psyllid, and that's exactly what the Mexicans are using to try to contain their psyllid populations. We in California are beginning the process of getting mass production of tamarixia going, and so we wanted to know what is it the head start the Mexicans have had on us in raising this little wasp? What is it we can learn from their production methods?
I guess there's been some funding put forward in California to have bids come in for people that want to get into the rearing of these wasps. How is that program going, and are you seeing some traction there and some interested parties, and what do you see in terms of time frame?
We know that there's at least two parties in California who want to bid on this public-private partnership, and possibly some out-of-state entities, so long as they don't come from a Huanglongbing quarantine area. Of course, we don't want any cure to actually cause disease in California, so that, I think, is a very reasonable restriction. But that bid, Gary, is on the street today. We are certainly at the Citrus Research Board looking for interested insectaries. Or if you've thought about getting into this business, we'd like to hear from those who can propose how they would go about raising this particular wasp to feed into the federal state CRB cooperative project.
Let's talk about this wasp a little bit, because, you know, what you just explained sounds pretty promising. But there's another side to this, as there often is in these scientific challenges, that, well, yes, it's another tool in the toolbox, but it's not the silver bullet, right?
Right. So, Gary, if we are looking to absolutely eradicate the psyllid, this is not the tool. Just for the simple biological fact, this wasp only feeds on psyllid. And so if you don't have the psyllid in an area, you can't actually maintain and support the wasp. It's a unique host feeder. It only feeds on one thing. Now, the situation in the area where it can be successful will be in maintaining low levels of psyllid populations, much like you have, for instance, in the LA Basin. Some levels a little higher than others, but say, for instance, a perimeter of a grove that's up against an urban or suburban neighborhood. This wasp would be a great thing to have in steady population to keep psyllid populations in check, where the grower can use the traditional tools, that is, the various insecticides that are labeled for psyllid control on citrus. And in that way, the grower can have a lot less risk of reinfestations after he's taken measures to control the psyllid population within his grow. So urban-suburban settings, organic growers certainly can and will use this kind of pest management because of their need to avoid some of the harsher pesticides. So it can be used, but not in a silver bullet package.
You know, when we talk about some of these challenges in the citrus industry, it's not just California, it's not just Florida, Texas. It's a global thing with citrus and this citrus psyllid and HLB problem. But even climatic changes, I understand, have some impact on what the scientists are learning. It's a different scenario, possibly in the heat and the dry air of California versus the moisture and the more temperate climate of a Florida grove, for example. We call them groves back in Florida. We call them orchards here in a lot of cases. But even the climate things are challenging to you guys when you're trying to determine which way to take science, aren't they?
Yes. You know, especially this disease complex, it has expressed itself differently in all the regions of the world where it has surfaced, ever so slightly. For instance, the visual symptoms on a tree are slightly different in China than they are in Florida and in Texas. So it takes a lot of science, a lot of applied work to really, truly understand this disease. And we're only, unfortunately, just scratching the surface.
When you talk about the disease, we're still, as far as I know, the one tree in the LA Basin that's actually been discovered to have the disease. Of course, everybody's holding their breath. You've seen the history of the Florida outbreak when the psyllid arrived, when the disease was first discovered, and by the time we saw it in Florida, it was literally all over the place because we've learned so much since then as to why we just couldn't see it. How's that whole timing factor, if you looked at when the psyllid was first discovered here, for example, how is it comparing? Are we on the same kind of timeline expectation? I know a lot of people are hoping we don't find it, but is there a possibility we won't hear, or is it just a matter of time?
You know, Gary, we've really got to be vigilant about whether there is a variation going on in California. That is it hiding in plain sight? And so I can assure you the Citrus Research Board, in conjunction with UC Davis, UC Riverside, some of the best molecular and genetic scientists in the world here in California, are looking at, is something hiding there? Has this bacteria done something different in California than it has in other parts of the world? So it does make us nervous that we're not finding it. Counterintuitively, it makes us nervous that we're not finding the Asiatic bacteria here. So a lot of work to be done here, but we're keeping our eyes open and bringing some of the best science to bear on the question.
That brings us to the detection, another arm of the research, if you will, involving a whole lot of different projects in detecting the disease. I know, you know, we've got dogs on the forefront. We've got folks that really believe those dogs are the answer. I mean, they sniff everything from drugs to bombs to gunpowder and anything else that can seem to be trained. So you've got that element of research. You've got scientists figuring out, it sounds like, that, you know, a tree has to incubate the disease, may have it in part of the limbs and not in. So if you test the wrong part at the wrong time, you miss it. How are we doing with that kind of research, and what's the expectation there? I guess getting down to an Olympics of opportunities on who's going to be the best detection of the disease first, so we can start finding it on trees that don't show it to the human eye yet?
Well, think back to your grammar school days and your mom at the school bake-off going on. We do have a project going on that CRB is sponsoring with a number of these California institutions happening up at UC Davis, comparing some of these deep science methods where we believe we are able to detect the disease earlier than the human eye. The dog is one of these. The dog will be tested against these man-made detection methods, or at least man-discovered detection methods. You know, the dog's been around for, some might say, as many as 50, 100,000 years and has perfected those sensory elements of the nose through the process of evolution. So we know the dog works. Some of these other methods, we suspect they can be tools in early detection. But we're going to compare them all. And yes, with USDA at our side and APHIS, who has to approve whether these can be used to definitively detect the disease, they're going to be at our side studying and watching our progress in real time.
You've been around this game for a long time. In Florida, you've got some history with it. You've seen the process there. You're bringing that expertise here. And really, it seems to me, just in visiting with some growers in the field, that a lot of what we've learned in Florida translated here very quickly and kind of gave you a jump start to where we didn't have that in Florida. It was all over us before we realized we had it. But give us a little comparison from your experience. We've seen a lot of challenges in citrus. This is kind of unprecedented to see this kind of attention on one issue, but this is a killer issue, isn't it?
It really is. You know, to look at Florida, it will be a crying shame if Texas and ultimately California don't look at that and take some lesson from it. Now, having said that, again, the disease could express itself ever so slightly differently, but being vigilant, knowing that it has and can have an economic impact if it does express itself in any way similar to the way it has in Florida, China, et cetera, it's something that California growers need to keep in the forefront of their mind.
And when you look at this and you talk about climatic differences and temperate climates, you know, out here, what is it, 106, 108 degrees outside your office today here in Visalia, how it expresses differently in China where the climate's totally different in those growing areas in many cases in the mountains and otherwise, you start wondering, gosh, it's been slower to rear its head here. There could be a whole myriad of things just in the climate things alone. I mean, there's some research that's going on with this heat treatment. So even that could be a factor in research, couldn't it?
Yes. Not only is Florida looking at that heavily, I know the federal committees, the MAC group, the multi-agency coordinating group, is working with Florida to try to ramp up large systems where heat treatment can be a reality for many acres at a time. That's Defense Department level type of research to get engineers involved, other disciplines that aren't typically involved in plant science to help engineer some of these solutions.
You know, we at Agnet West really appreciate access to you and being able to touch on this. But, you know, really, we're just scratching the surface of a lot of things you're dealing with. If you're a citrus grower out here, whether it be in Tulare County or down in the Ventura area or wherever, as a grower, what's the best thing for that grower to be thinking to stay abreast of what you're doing? I know you're having some field meetings and have had some grower meetings around the state. But if you're really trying to stay on top and learn more about this and help the process, what should the grower be doing? I mean, obviously, they're pretty nervous right now and they see all this money being thrown at this thing. Is there anything else they can be doing except trying to stay informed? And if so, how do they do that the best way?
CitrusInsider.org. I'll repeat that. CitrusInsider, that's all one word, .org, is an excellent website that your grower dollars have sponsored through the CPDPC. That's the Pest and Disease Committee, Citrus Pest and Disease Committee. And that site will keep growers in particular geographic areas, and you can go on there and look at your area for the latest psyllid finds, any quarantine areas, but also, importantly, psyllid management areas are on the horizon. That is, groups of growers, small groups of growers, getting together, exchanging emails, telephone numbers for purposes of coordinated treatments. And recommendations will be coming from these various psyllid management area leaders. So to be teeing yourself up, making yourself available to your fellow growers in your area so you can best manage the psyllid would be my number one recommendation.
That's a great point to bring up, because we saw this in Florida where you've got literally miles and miles and miles of nothing but citrus. Down in your family's area, Lake Placid and that whole Highlands County, we call it the Heartland region of Florida. But really, that neighborhood approach was kind of a novel approach at the beginning, but they've really signed on to it. And it sounds like the California folks and the Texas folks have realized there's something to that. Obviously, if you're spraying your grove or orchard here and your neighbor's not, it's a matter of moving the silage back and forth and neither person gets anywhere. So this whole neighborhood approach is really critical for the future in the meantime while you scientists can work through the process.
Right. And I think they found in Florida that pesticide resistance, of course, was a concern. And so these coordinated sprays will help rotate among the various active ingredients and help to avoid that. So learn from the experience of Florida would be my recommendation to California growers.
We've jumped all over the place. I want to wrap this up. And what would you like a final thought for the grower community and the community at large?
Well, just that their citrus research board, that's 24 of their fellow growers, are really dedicating a lot of time and effort to making sure the best research gets funded using the grower dollars as investments. And that process is underway here. It's an annual process for the board. We get pretty hot and heavy during August and September in funding the various projects around the state. Probably over 60 to 70% of those funds will be dedicated to HLB, ACP. So growers, you have an organization working on it hard. It's your peer group that's doing it, and it couldn't be done without your investment. So thanks to the growers.
Again, thank you to Ken. Ken Keck, President of Citrus Research Board, based here in Visalia. So appreciate your time today. Thanks so much for the access.
Thank you, Gary.